The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
B-Pod Studios.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Maz.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, Maz, screw the delay. Let's do it. You ready?
Sure.
Okay, here we go.
I think I'll go for a walk outside now. The summer sun's calling my name.
Hey, Paul.
I hear you now. I just can't stay inside all day. I gotta get out. Give me some of those rays. Everybody's smiling. It's a sunshine day. Everybody's laughing. Sunshine day. Everybody seems so happy today.
How about a Kriller?
It's a sunshine day.
How was that, Murray? Did that work against
it
the delay?
It did not work. That's why I stayed away.
Not even close. Curious what it's going to sound like on the replay. Either way, that means Paul Perillo is standing by via Zoom, as usual. Paul Perillo from Patriots.com. Hi, Pip. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Much better than that rendition, I'll tell you that.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I don't know. I think on the playback, it might hit a few of the right notes. I want your thoughts on the thing I just teased, the things we're just talking about. Jared Stidham at the end of that ball game. Do you read into anything about that stint?
Yeah, you know, I started thinking about it as the game was going on. You know, he came in, which was a little earlier than we normally see a backup. And then I started wondering the way they used him, if maybe there was a little bit more to it. Now, listen, it's probably way out there. I know you and Greg talked about this yesterday, but I had the same kinds of thoughts. I'm wondering if maybe they're looking at these games are all do or die. They have to have them, and they can't afford to say, well, if we fall behind by a couple of scores, we got to ride it out. And maybe it's desperation mode. We can't afford to lose, you know, almost like a playoff game, you know. You have to treat all four of these games like playoff games. And I'm just wondering if, you know, they're behind by two scores in the second half. I wonder if maybe they think that Stidham might give them a little bit better chance to throw the ball every down than Cam does. Now,
do you?
I think they've been down two scores six times so far, and they're 1-5 in those games. The only win was the Jets game. So I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility. I would be surprised. It's a little bit out there. It'd be pretty unconventional, you know, to do that after you stuck by Newton in every game. So I just struck my mind Sunday afternoon when we were watching that game, and Stidham came in, and not only came in, but was throwing the ball right away.
Well, what do you think some of the obstacles are there to actually doing that?
Well, first and foremost, how much better option would that be? And I don't know that. Bill does. You know, Bill has an idea from watching practice every day and understanding and knowing where Stidham is in the offense and within the system and whatnot. Is it really a better option to have Stidham out there? Maybe his lack of experience would make up for the fact that, you know, he maybe throws the ball a little bit better than Cam at this point. And just, you know, the overall statement that it makes to the team and the offense itself, you know, this is the guy you've been, this is our guy all year. He's led us and you've stuck by him. And now here we are with some adversity and you're going to pull him. So I think it's probably a long shot, but it did cross my mind.
Okay. Maz, let me ask one more. How do you think he looked? Can you fairly assess how he being Stidham, looked in that game?
Yeah, I thought it was without question the best I've seen.
This is Bob Soucy. The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon. As a runner myself representing the Flutie Foundation at the 2022 Boston Marathon, I'm proud to have been a teammate to many amazing Adaptive Program runners, achieving their dreams at the greatest race in the world. The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six World Major Marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at BostonScores.org/Noah.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Mass.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, Mass, screw the delay. Let's do it. You ready?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. I think I'll go for a walk outside now. The summer sun's calling my name.
Hey, Paul.
I hear you now. I just can't stay inside all day. I gotta get out, get me some of those rays. Woo! Everybody's smiling, sunshine day. Everybody's laughing, sunshine day. Everybody seems so happy today.
How about a Kriller?
It's a sunshine day.
I think I'll go for a walk outside.
How was that, Murray? Did that work against
it
the delay?
It did not work. That's why I stayed away.
Not even close. Curious what it's going to sound like on the replay. Either way, that means Paul Perillo is standing by via Zoom, as usual. Paul Perillo from Patriots.com. Hi, Pip. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Much better than that rendition, I'll tell you that.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I don't know. I think on the playback, it might hit a few of the right notes. I want your thoughts on the thing I just teased, the things we were just talking about. Jared Stidham at the end of that ball game. Do you read into anything about that stint?
Yeah, you know, I started thinking about it as the game was going on. You know, he came in, which was a little earlier than we normally see a backup. And then I started wondering the way they used him, if maybe there was a little bit more to it. Now, listen, it's probably way out there. I know you and Greg talked about this yesterday, but I had the same kinds of thoughts. I'm wondering if maybe they're looking at these games are all do or die. They have to have them, and they can't afford to say, well, if we fall behind by a couple of scores, we got to ride it out. And maybe it's desperation mode. We can't afford to lose, you know, almost like a playoff game, you know. You have to treat all four of these games like playoff games. And I'm just wondering if, you know, they're behind by two scores in the second half. I wonder if maybe they think that Stidham might give them a little bit better chance to throw the ball every down than Cam does. Now,
do you?
I think they've been down two scores six times so far, and they're 1-5 in those games. The only win was the Jets game. So I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility. I would be surprised. It's a little bit out there. It's, you know, it'd be pretty unconventional, you know, to do that after you're stuck by Newton in every game. So I just struck my mind Sunday afternoon when we were watching that game, and Stidham came in, and not only came in, but was throwing the ball right away.
Well, what do you think some of the obstacles are there to actually doing that?
Well, first and foremost, how much better option would that be? And I don't know that. Bill does. You know, Bill has an idea from watching practice every day and understanding and knowing where Stidham is in the offense and within the system and whatnot. Is it really a better option to have Stidham out there? Maybe his lack of experience would make up for the fact that, you know, he maybe throws the ball a little bit better than Cam at this point. And just, you know, the overall statement that it makes to the team and the offense itself, you know, this is the guy you've been, this is our guy all year. He's led us and you've stuck by him. And now here we are with some adversity and you're going to pull him. So like I said, I think it's probably a long shot, but it did cross my mind.
Okay. How do you think he, Maz, let me ask one more. How do you think he looked? Can you fairly assess how he being Stidham, looked in that game?
Yeah, I thought it was without question the best I've seen him look in a game, in a game setting. But I mean, it's impossible to just ignore the fact that it was 38-0 and the other team was basically back in the locker room. I mean, you can't ignore that fact. It was, you know, a situation that was a little bit different in terms of the way that the Chargers were playing. But I do think he looked comfortable. I thought he, you know, looked like he was delivering the ball on time with, you know, he could throw the ball. There's no question. In training camp, if you were looking at the three guys throwing the ball, Stidham threw it the best. It didn't always look the best because he didn't always go where it was supposed to on time. But when they actually threw the ball, the three of them, I think Stidham of the three threw the ball the best.
So, Paul, a second ago you said, do we know that Stidham can do a better job with it than Newton? Right. And, you know, you said, I don't think we know that. Maybe Bill does. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
that's it.
Okay. So that's basically what you said. Here's my question, though. If you get down two, don't we know that Newton can't do it?
Yeah, and that's why I wonder about it. But it might give you no shot. Like, I mean, if you look at it, you know, and Mike, you've been on this all year, and I've sort of been arguing with you a little bit about it. But, yeah, they've been down two scores several times, and they haven't really been able to come back and win. But Newton has sort of gotten themselves in position where they had a chance. You know, Houston, they fall short in the last drive. Seattle, they fall short in the last drive. So they had opportunities based on what Newton had, you know, at least partly on what Newton had done in those games. So it's not like you fall behind by two scores and you leave Cam Newton in the game, you end up losing by four scores. That's not what's happened. He's been able to rally the team even, you know, outside of the comfort of the way they want to play offense. So I don't know what would happen if Stidham went in. Maybe, you know, maybe he takes a 10-point game and makes it a 20-point game. I just don't know the answer to that.
So what stands in the way, I don't think Bill would do it. I think he should do it. I don't think he will do it. And it's for the obstacles that I sort of alluded to before, Paul. And I think they're all the wrong reasons, really, because they're not in the best interest of the team. Or at least short term, not in the best interest of the team. And what I'm driving at is this. The locker room likes Cam Newton, you know, a popular guy, apparently. And so there's sensitivities in the locker room. Cam Newton also took Belichick's lousy contract offer. And that's, certainly a way to get in his good graces, take his cheap contract offer. And Cam Newton's certainly doing that. Cam Newton's kissing his ass publicly. And Bill has stated publicly, on the record, or at least, I don't know if it was him stating it, but didn't Saban tell us this or whatever. It's out there that he only wants to coach guys that he likes and, you know, be surrounded by people that he likes. And Cam Newton has made sure to kiss the boss's ass and be that guy. And so Bill probably likes Cam Newton. And he likes working with Cam Newton. I heard Burt Breer say today that in Foxborough, one of the things that they really like about Cam Newton is that he's not going around the building, I'm paraphrasing, bitching about what he's surrounded by. That Tom Brady doing that the last couple of years rubbed them the wrong way, and they really appreciate the fact that Cam Newton is not going around complaining about what he's surrounded by, which is pretty much the same bucket of crap, but they don't have to hear it from Cam Newton. So it's all these sort of ass-kissy reasons that Bill likes is the reason he's going to stick with him and not do him dirty by taking him out of a game, and those are the wrong reasons. But that's just my thought on that.
Yeah, I do think, and I think I brought this up about a month ago or maybe a little bit more, that possibility. And in short, maybe Bill feels like he owes it to Cam. You know, Cam came in last minute. He took obviously a ridiculously team-friendly deal. And maybe the flip side of that was, okay, I understand, you know, this is a well below market deal, but in exchange, I'm going to give you the season. I'm going to let you play the year. This will, you know, you have a chance to rehab your career and you'll be a free agent again, and you'll have a chance to maybe, you know, show the league that you can do this and get yourself ready for 2021. And I don't want to say he guaranteed it, but maybe there was an agreement there among the two. And Belichick said, I'm going to give you the season.
Yeah.
And as long as we're in it, I'm going to give it to you. It's up to you. I would agree with you. That's the wrong reason. But I do wonder, you know, and I've asked that question a couple of times to some people and no one has said anything, you know, to back that up. So in other words, everybody that I've said that to, so that I'd never heard anything like that. So,
well, I mean, there's no way Bill would share that with anyone.
Bill operates, but
as I said, simple quid pro quo, take my lousy contract, say nice things about me, you know, be a leader in the locker room with my program and I'll take care of you. And that's what's, you know, like that's sort of what's going on. And that's why I think, I just don't think Bill would do it. I think he should do it, but I really don't see it. Paul, how do you feel about the team in general? Do you feel they're getting better? Do you feel they're putting something together here?
Yeah, I mean, you can't help but think that was a little different on Sunday. And I don't care how much you think the Chargers had to do with it, and I think the Chargers had a lot to do with it. But I'm not really concerned with how the opponent is playing as much as I am the Patriots. You know, 2 weeks ago against Arizona, that was a game that was entirely, in my opinion, about what Arizona couldn't do. This game, the Patriots just came out. They established it right from the jump with the first drive. I thought, you know, they showed some creativity with some different things they did, a couple of wildcat plays. They really established the run. They went right down the field. They scored. Now, the first drive that the Chargers had, they did the same thing. They had a mix of run and pass. They went right down the field. They missed the field goal. That was it. That was all the Patriots needed. You missed that field goal, that was your shot to stay in the game. Now we're going to end the game. We ended it with special teams. Now, the offense didn't do a whole lot from that point on, to be honest, but it was by far the best game the defense has played all year. I thought they did a great job of getting after a young quarterback, which they often do. And I thought Stephon Gilmore was outstanding in this game. I thought he really was physical going against a guy like Keenan Allen, who I think is a pretty good receiver. Maybe he's not the best receiver in football, but he's in that conversation for the most consistent, tough, physical kind of guy. And Gilmore just owned him. And I thought defensively, if they can play that style where they can get some pressure without blitzing and cover on the back end, they can be pretty good defensively, and that'll keep them in games. They're going to need that because they're not going to be able to score enough on their own.
So do you give them more of a sniff than you did just a couple of weeks ago?
It's the same. My sniff is the same, Mike. They have to win every game. You have to win out. And, the last five games, they're 4-1 in their last five games. The combined record of those five opponents is 20-40. Well, now you play three teams that can play. You have 2 8-win teams and a 9-win team on tap. So you're stepping up considerably in weight class.
Yeah, Paul, I think this is the one too. The others I can at least, I can envision the Patriots coming through in those situations. Like, for example, 10 days off, going to Miami, rookie quarterback. They can pull that off. At home, Buffalo, whom they played tooth and nail the first time they played him up there. I can see that one too. And the Jets, we don't even have to talk about. But this game tomorrow, this is the one I have a hard time believing they can pull out, because I just don't think they're going to be able to score in this game.
Yeah, they'll need to score tomorrow. They'll need to score against Buffalo. The Miami game, I think, is their kind of game, because I don't think the Dolphins, I don't care who plays quarterback, they can't really score. They have no offense. Fitzpatrick will pass it to them five times like he always does if he plays. So to me, it's got less to do with the quarterback as it does with that offense. They just do not score a lot of points. The other two games, you might need to get up 24, 27 points to win. And that's when, if the other team doesn't turn the ball over, you have a hard time keeping up. And that's sort of the flaw with this team is offensively, they really only have one way to win, and that's to beat you over the head with the running game and play good defense.
So, Mike, can we just jump back to Newton for a second here?
Please. Yeah.
Because Paul, you mentioned earlier, you said, those games where they were down by two scores, did you say 1-5 in those games?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So
in the second half, two scores in the second half.
But your point is a good one, which is to say that Cam Newton brought them back and put them in position to win some of those games, and then they didn't just close it out, which leads me to this. Do you think he's throwing the ball the same way now that he did earlier in the year?
No. And really, the only time I was really impressed with the way he threw the ball, and I this is going to sound bad, I get a lot of static for this. In the third quarter, late third quarter and into the fourth quarter in Seattle was the only time all year I watched him throw the ball and said, that's the old Cam Newton. He's effortlessly throwing the ball down the field to Julian Edelman, had made some big plays in that game. Really,
why would people give you grief for that?
Since then, in every other game, he threw for, I don't know if you guys heard this, but he threw for 350 yards against Houston.
Yeah, 60 came on one play, I think.
I just want to make sure you knew that, because a lot of people have pointed that out to me over the last couple of weeks. I don't think he threw the ball well in that game at all. I think the best play in that game was a bomb to Damir Bird that was thrown well behind him.
Over the wrong shoulder.
I don't think he's, to Tony's point, I don't think he's throwing the ball as well as he did earlier in the year.
Okay. So let's talk some football. Let's talk some football with Paulie Paul Perillo. A couple open lines if you want to grab them. 617-779-0985. Yet another legit football voice. Yep. Paulie's a legit football voice. Thinks there may be some method to that Stidham stint in the last game. But actually, Bill going through with that, I don't know. Should he? Would he? Your thoughts on that? Anything Patriot related to you with Paul right after this.
Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Mike Palmer, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six World Major Marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at bostonscores.org/Noah.
Felger and Mass, number one, because they know how to build winning relationships.
The players are arrogant dirtbags.
Dingbat.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
With a second down and nine snap. Again, a play fake and a throw down the middle. Olszewski catches at the 25, runs right to the 15, to the 10. High steps out of a hit into the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots.
There's your dart.
There's that instead of touchdown pass we were talking about before with Paulie Paul Perillo. To your thoughts, as promised, Kevin, Rhode Island. Go ahead, Kevin. What do you got?
Hey, I was just a few weeks ago they mentioned that it might be his foot that's still bothering him, that's throwing off his mechanics. I was just wondering from you guys, could you guys see a lot more of him playing? What's your thoughts on that, if it's possible that he's not throwing right anymore because of his foot?
You got it. Paul's health factor with Cam Newton.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, I don't know for sure how much those things are bothering him, but I don't think he's running the ball. He runs with power. I mean, he's been unbelievable in short yardage, right? That's where he's been best. At the goal line, short yardage, you know, 11 touchdowns. And without that production, the offense would really, really be in trouble. But I don't think he's running with the elusiveness. I don't think he scrambles well on pass plays, off script. And even some of the plays that he's kept the ball on some of the zone reads, he usually gets a couple of yards and then goes down. I don't think he's looking to make people miss. So I don't think that he is fully healthy with the foot or the shoulder. I don't think he's throwing the ball well, and I don't think he's running as well as he did, say, back in week one.
Right, so I was going to ask you, foot or shoulder? You think both?
Both. Yeah, I mean, for his sake, I kind of hope.
Yeah.
I hope it's a physical thing because he just doesn't look – this is a guy that was as dynamic and athletic as anybody in the league, you know, when he was in his heyday. And I understand, you know, everybody gets older and the wear and tear, especially a guy like that who's taken a lot of hits. But he, I mean, in my opinion, he looks like a shell of his former self athletically. He can still do some of it. He's so big and he's so strong that he moves the pile. The touchdown runs the other day, it's not like he just bowled over everybody and walked in. I mean, those were tough, hard physical yards that he got. So he can still do that just because of his sheer size, but I don't think athletically he's making a lot of guys miss anymore.
No, he's not explosive.
No.
I mean, he's not explosive in any facet of the game. Woody and Lowell, what do you got for Paul Perillo, Woody?
Hey, there's a lot of ways to win football games in the NFL. I think Belichick is getting excited about what he's got going on right now. All right. I think this team is a little bit like the 2001 team, only they don't have Tom Brady. They don't have that arm, but they got the special teams. They got the defense. And I think you're going to see them working Stidham in more and more, more okay, like a New Orleans kind of thing. You can have two quarterbacks and win ball games.
Okay. I hear you. I'd be surprised if Bill did that to Cam Newton. Back to our first segment. I just think I think Cam has done everything Bill has wanted other than play well, but Bill cares as much about that other stuff now as the playing well thing.
What wide receivers on this team remind you of Troy Brown and David Patton?
So I just wanted to go back to the whole thing about winning in different ways, Paul, and the rushing touchdowns just as good as the passing touchdown, and winning on defense and special teams, they're doing it. They did it in 01. They're doing it not like that whole storyline. How do you feel about that?
Well, I would say winning in different ways is great. I think there are a lot of different ways. I think the Patriots really only have one, and that's, you know, to make all those plays that we're talking about on special teams and play suffocating defense. I don't think they can win 35-31. You know, without turnovers.
Well, but
like, so to
I,
say
I
that they can win
is
a lot of different ways. You know, you're talking about the running touchdowns. Yeah, they can get around 17 points because of the way they run the ball. That like that to me is about the limit. I mean, even offensively, like I think people look at the 45 points the other day and they think this was a great offensive game. It wasn't. They really only had two drives in the whole game, and one of them was greatly aided by a bonehead penalty on 3rd and 19. The first drive of the game was outstanding. From that point on, they didn't do a whole lot offensively.
No, but when he says different ways than what they've done the last, well, the last, whatever, 15 with Tom Brady, where it's been a, you know, prolific passing attack. That's what I think he's referring to. And they did it in 01, Paul, like that piece that Murray started to hit on, you know, well, he did this in 2001. Why can't they do it again?
Yeah. I don't think they did this in 2001.
Yeah. Cause the 2001 team was good.
I think at the time we were all stunned, Mike, and you were with us then.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we just saw this kid playing and all the plays that he would make. Do you remember all the plays that he made, like on third down, moving the chains with big throws and how clutch they were? And, you know, at the end of the game, like, do you see that now?
No.
Like, forget the I mean, it was a championship caliber defense that they had then. And they did. The caller's right. They made special teams plays. And they had a lot of different things, but they made a lot of plays offensively that they don't make now.
Yeah, to me, that look, there's a lot of reasons they're not 0-1. I mean, he said they're like 0-1 except for Brady. Yeah. Oh, right, just that small thing. And I know that Brady back then wasn't Brady, don't get me wrong. But right. Let's face it, he had an uncanny knack for making the best decision and the right play at the right time. Let's not forget that in the Super Bowl, what did they have left on the clock when John Madden? Okay, John Madden told him to take a knee, and all of a sudden Brady gets him in a field goal position, and they win the game. Can Cam Newton do that?
Well, this is my point. I mean, if you go back to 01, even if they won on defense and special teams and Brady was a compliment, if you go back and look at some of those games, the amount of one-possession games, late games that they pulled out, Brady being front and center, it was they won a slew of games like that. Never mind, 2 out of 3 in the playoffs. Cam, what is Cam Newton's record in one-possession games? Like, he's won like twice if it's been settled by, you know, one or
Arizona
once.
And the Jets, they were able to win.
Yeah. So like he's failed in most of those situations. So there's a big difference there.
And the whole two quarterback thing too, like New Orleans' quarterback got hurt and Taysom Hill has gone in and done a good job. Like it's not necessarily, they use Taysom Hill to go in when Breeze is healthy to run the ball every once in a while and have a package of plays, but that's not exactly using two quarterbacks.
Vinny in Manchester has a thought. First, you're up next with Paul Perillo. Hi, Vin.
Hey, guys, hope you're having a good day. Just have a question, need your opinion. I'm wondering, if Tom Brady was on the team currently, given his decline over in Tampa Bay, slight decline, he's being saved by his weapons over there, how do you think the Patriots' record would be right now, given all of their problems this year? Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
They'd be at least 8-4. Two of those, you know, they've had 5 one-possession games, 6 one-possession games, something like that, and you're 2-4 in those games. Flip it. I'm not saying he'd come through in every single one, because he certainly didn't last year. And he doesn't come through every time, you know, despite how we view it, you know, in the abstract, not everyone's a win, but I think you'd be 8-4. I think you'd have pulled out a couple of those games. You would have beaten Denver.
Here's how I look at it.
And
it's impossible to answer. You're right, Mike. And I know you guys have talked about this a little bit, but don't you think they run the ball pretty well? You know, as a general rule this season, I think Damian Harris, since he's come in, they usually run the ball pretty well, right? Can you imagine how much better they could run the ball if they weren't facing 9 guys in the box every play?
So a lot of people give the running game credit to Cam Newton, that you have to account for Cam Newton as a runner, and that opens things up for Damian Harris. And that whole threat, you're saying, that actually hurts matters because everyone just crowds the line of scrimmage.
No, well, I have no doubt that Cam Newton's presence helps them run the ball, his ability to do that and be an extra ball carrier, but there's just a lot of congestion. You go back and watch the way Arizona played that game that day. It was unreal. That's a terrible run defense that shut them down because everybody was congested inside the box and daring them to do something different. And that was a bad, bad day in the passing game for the Patriots and for Newton. So I think with Tom Brady, you can't get away with just putting everybody at the line of scrimmage and daring him to make a pass downfield. And as much as you might want to think that he's declined, I didn't think he played very well last year. And we came on and we talked about that a lot during our shows last year about Brady. Yes, the weapons were an issue, but no, he didn't play well. So I don't think they would be this undefeated team if Tom Brady were here.
No way.
But I think they'd be able to move the ball a little bit more effectively if he were here.
Yeah, I'd give him a couple more games. You know,
yeah.
You're still not winning a championship, but I just think you're coming through in a few more of those situations than you've come through in with Cam Newton. Let's hit on last night's action, both as it relates to the Cowboys, as it relates to the Ravens, and how it relates to the path. I continue to get no help on the path.
You're not getting a lot of path help. It's coming, though, Mike. Your opportunities are coming with Kansas City and Miami, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Cleveland, Baltimore. You have some chances coming up this weekend. But last night, I don't know if you guys watched much of the game. I wasn't overly impressed with Baltimore's performance, especially defensively. But what was really, really stuck out to me was listening to Troy Aikman talk about the Cowboys and how many times he questioned their effort, especially on defense.
Okay, well, let's get to that. Yeah, I agree with you. So let's get to that after Big Jim Murray's update. Don't go anywhere.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all 6 world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at BostonScores.org/Noah.
It's the show the crowd goes wild for.
Ooh, boo.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Fourth down and 2 at the Dallas 37. Jackson in the gun. He's got a back to his right. It's 2 to go. And it's a keeper, and he runs right up the middle for a first down to the 20, to the 10, touchdown, Jackson right up the middle. 37-yard run.
Yeah, that was
on fourth and 2.
How many times have we seen that, too, where we just saw it against Washington in the last game after the botched fake punt, 23 yards. Antonio Gibson just takes the first play, and there was nobody there. And same thing here. There's just nobody there. Leighton Vanders looks like he gets caught up looking at the back. You know, they talk about eye discipline all the time, and Cowboys just didn't have it. Everybody looked at the back, followed him, and Lamar Jackson, no surprise, ran with the football.
No surprise to anyone but the Cowboys. I picked that play because I think that one said it all, and it came early. That was Baltimore's first touchdown, 4th and 2. And if you saw the play that I'm talking about, it is like the seas parted for the most obvious running quarterback and the most obvious running quarterback situation you could possibly imagine. And the Cowboys don't account for Lamar Jackson. Treat it like just another play, and he's just another quarterback. And there is nobody home, and he waltzes in from about the 40-yard line. When I say untouched, no one was within 10 yards of the guy, all the way into the end zone. And that just sort of encapsulates what I watched last night, Paul. The Dallas Cowboys disgust me.
Yeah.
I think they're disgusting. Go ahead.
No, look, the play you're talking about just ran right down the middle of the field untouched. And what was that stat I saw? They've given up 200 yards rushing 3 times this year? Like, it's preposterous. You give up that many yards on the ground, you've quit.
Yeah.
So they quit.
That's what stuck out to me, Mike, was Aikman's comments. And we know that Aikman knows the inside of that organization as well as anybody. He has Jerry Jones's ear. So clearly, they feel like there's some effort problems on defense. And I thought, you know, Andy Dalton, I thought the passing game, I thought they did some things offensively last night to keep them in games. They missed 3 field goals. Those are killers. And that's why they couldn't stay competitive. But when you have 300 yards rushing in a game, and the point that you made, Mike, about they treated Lamar Jackson like any other quarterback, I think is dead on. And it wasn't just that play. It was 3rd and longs that they seemed content to allow him to drop back, not be able to find anybody, and just scramble for the first down. They must have done it 5 times.
The entire game, giving up the perimeter – to the most prolific, obvious running quarterback in the NFL. And I just, it's part of it is that Dallas team, what a bunch of dogs. What a bunch of quitting dogs. They're not out of it. And as you mentioned, Andy Dalton is serviceable.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not like they need to go 10-2 to win that division. You know, 7-9, 6-10 might get it done, given what that division is. They're one game out of first place going into last night. So they are right in the thick of it. And Andy Dalton is serviceable enough to get you to 7-9 or 6-10. He can do that. But the entire operation is like, we quit. There's nothing to play for. So that's one. But two is just schematically on defense. I mean, I saw that from Mike McCarthy forever. It's like, he does the offense. No, the defense? Well, that's someone else's. Go ask Mike Nolan, man. I don't got anything to do with that. And there's no game planning. It's like, you may suck defensively, that's fine. But you have to scheme it to take away Lamar Jackson and then have them beat you with everything else. Like, it's just obvious. It's 101. Take away the perimeter from Lamar Jackson. One. That's it. And if they beat you with 2 and 3, they beat you with 2 and 3. But Dallas, nothing. No special attention paid to Lamar Jackson as a running quarterback. And that it disgusted me watching that.
Yeah, that's all a real shame. The one takeaway I have from this last night, and thank God the Ravens won, is that it's the first time I've actually seen flashes of 2019 Lamar Jackson. Was he great? No. He still threw some terrible ducks. But the most impressive play that reminded me of last year is when he rolled to his left. They were around like the 25-yard line, and he threw this little like lollipop pass to Hollywood Brown that was the balls.
Yeah, great throw. But I Maz, don't you love when we give Felge a chance to just look back at the Packers and all the things that he hates about his team, and McCarthy gets in his crosshairs and he just starts railing against Mike McCarthy and how bad he is.
I'll tell you what, though. Mike, I'm glad you brought this up, okay? Because Dallas is last in the league in scoring defense. They're last in the league in rushing defense. And if you remember, it was, 6 weeks into the season, if that, when players in the locker room were already complaining about McCarthy and his staff, like that they didn't believe in the coaching staff. Has a coach like that ever gone and been fired after a year?
Yeah.
Yeah, Arizona. What was the just happened 2 years ago, right?
I mean, I think it's in play. That feels like a disaster
it
down there.
Be.
So, but it, to me, it's something deeper and cultural. Like the players are just the players feel like they gave up before they even realized Mike McCarthy sucks. Like it was just too easy. Like, what is Zeke Elliott doing? You know, like I watch him. I feel like he's just slapping it out there. He's just there going through the motions. And, you know, that stupid contract with him, it's like that Pollard kid gets just as much run as he does. It's like, what are they doing with Zeke Elliott? What's the point of Zeke Elliott on that team? That's sort of a sidebar. But, Paul, back to your point about just the pack. I mean, you wouldn't believe how many times they'd go into a game and there'd be like, say, Stephon Diggs when he was with Minnesota. It's like he's their big threat. He's the guy that's getting most of the action down the field. He's the guy you have to stop. You start with stopping Stephon Diggs, and then everything else goes from there. And they'd play the Packers and Mike McCarthy, and Stephon Diggs would go for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns, and they would just cover him one-on-one like he was just another receiver. It's like, do you game plan at all? Do you have any thoughts, Mike? You've been in the game forever. Do you have any thoughts whatsoever on the defensive side of the ball? Just a big picture thing. I know you're not a defensive guy, so you don't have to dial up the bird dog blitz with all the exit, but just from a broad schematic thing. Can you look at the other side of the ball and say, let's take him away? Just, I don't know, Lamar Jackson running the ball on 3rd and 4th down? Did it ever occur to you to pay extra attention to that? Nope, it doesn't really.
I love listening to your rants on the Packers.
Oh, my God, I'm telling you, it did not surprise me in the least. Of course McCarthy didn't account for Lamar Jackson. Why would he? He's too busy, you know, looking at the next play on his play sheet. And oh, by the way, Murray, he's turning into Andy Reid looking at the cheesecake menu to begin with. Have you seen how Mike McCarthy has blown up?
Yeah. He's huge. Yeah. He's huge. My God, he's gigantic. He's an absolute freaking whale. He's Veruca Salt, crying out loud. Hey, turn it into a human blueberry on the sideline.
That guy has blown. He was never svelte to begin with, but holy crap.
We like him bigger in Texas.
Oh, my God. Is he blown up? Yeah. Is he blown up?
No bagel bites for him.
But Dallas still has plenty of talent on both sides of the ball. They have plenty of talent offensively. Andy Dalton is more than serviceable. He can get the ball there most of the time. He can get it there enough for them to go 6-10, 7-9. Instead, Nope. We're just going to pack it in. That Dallas team is gross. What a gross operation that is.
You sound hurt, Mike.
Well, because you know what? Last night bothered me. I mean, I like Murray. I watch plenty of bad football, and I stick with uncompetitive games. Last night I had to turn off. Last night to me felt like an NBA team on the second of back-to-backs, just not even trying, and one of those, you know, throwaway NBA games where one of the teams is just quit. You know, happens routinely in that league during the regular season, the NBA. That's what it feels like with the Dallas Cowboys. Quit.
Well, to make you even more mad, I think they had 11 days since their last game, so they had a ton of time to prepare for this too, and that was the performance you got.
It's just a joke, and it's annoying watching a defense that's that bad. They just no resistance. Why am I watching if you just are going to offer zero resistance?
But maybe they're tanking too. They get the number 5 pick in the draft right now.
Is that right?
Yes, number 5. In fact, they're tied with the Chargers for number 4, so I'm not going to get into tiebreakers and all that crap.
Wow.
But Dallas has the second worst point differential in the league. Only the Jets are worse.
What do you do there if you're Dallas? Do you take a quarterback?
Thank
and
you.
Let that go?
That was going to be my Mr. Facilitator over there, sunshine.com. That's it. What do you do if one of those quarterbacks?
Yeah. These are the things that we talk about on Patriots Unfiltered.
To me, if you don't want to pay Dak Prescott, you might as well just draft the next guy.
Right.
If you don't want to pay him, draft the next guy and trade Dak Prescott and start drafting.
If I'm them, I get the information on the injury, obviously, and start there. And if there's any question, you draft the guy. If you think he's coming back and playing, I would pay Prescott and trade that pick and get multiple picks. They got some holes on defense.
And I like him, but I don't know. That's a bad injury. I think that they've seen what the ceiling is there. I think you sack the big fat head coach, you hire Lincoln Riley, and you draft a new guy.
So, I am disgusted, not just because I was offended by the Dallas's effort and McCarthy's coaching, but can I get just a little help along the way on the path? Like, I've gotten so little help. It's unbelievable that I just no one's collapsed. Most of these close games are going against me when it looks like there's a team that could lose that would help me on the path, like the Raiders. The Jets hand them the game, or the Colts are, you know, up against their own goal line. Houston's going in for the winning touchdown, and they botch the snap. It's like I've only gotten like one or two games out of about 20 that I could have used to help me with the path. And last night was the latest. Like, can I get one break on the path?
Yeah, but those kinds of games, you did get two big ones, you know, two upsets. When you have Atlanta beating the Raiders, I mean, and then Miami losing to Denver. Those are big, that for your purposes, Mike, those are big games.
I need more. I need a couple more of those.
Well, this was the whole reason why it's hard. This is why people sort of push back against you. Because there's a lot of teams that need to lose a lot of games.
Or mocked it and laughed at it.
Like, well, not only that, but aside from that, what it really demonstrates is how bad the Patriots suck. Because when you start banking and requesting other people to lose, it means that you blow.
Yeah, you kind of blow. But there's still a chance for you to make the postseason. And I find that interesting.
If they win out and go 10-6, they're going to have to get extremely unlucky not to get in.
Right. So 10-6, they're in, for all intents and purposes.
I think
9-7, if they win their last three, is still on the table, Paul. It's just less than 50-50.
You're asking for a lot there.
I'm asking for some things, and I feel like I've gotten none. You say I've gotten a couple. I've needed more. I mean, what, Cleveland blowing out Tennessee? That makes sense? Like, can I at least get Cleveland acting like Cleveland for 5 minutes?
See, that's the whole thing. Is like the Patriots are supposed to beat all the teams that they play, but the teams that are ahead of them are supposed to lose all their games.
Yeah, that's what it usually works around here. Everything breaks the Patriots' way. What's happened to that? Where's that gone all of a sudden?
He went down to Tampa.
Tampa Bay.
Yeah, that's what happened there.
Jared Goff should be ready to roll an ankle any minute now.
Yeah, remember the old days when the best player always got hurt?
He wasn't on the injury report, man.
That's right. All right, let's wrap it up with Paul and his thoughts on those Rams coming up in our long commercial-free segment next.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name's Mike Palmer, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at Boston Scores. .org/Noah
and .org.
It's not complaining.
Oh, you're the mean boss. Aw.
It's just Felger.
No. It's always no.
Felger, Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
5 seconds frozen on the clock. The Patriots with a 13-3 lead over the Rams. Tom Brady, about to be a six-time champion, takes the snap, drops to the knee. And the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title. In the early 2000s, they won 3 of 4. Now they have won 3 of the last 5. Yes, it's still a dynasty.
So that's the last time we saw the Rams. Super Bowl 3 years ago. Here we go again. So, Paul, give me your assessment of this matchup.
This is going to be, I think, a tough physical game. I don't expect a ton of points on either side, but I do respect the Rams, and I think they've grown a lot since that loss. And to me, it's going to be all come down to Goff. If you can get pressure on Jared Goff and make him uncomfortable, I think he's still susceptible to the mistakes that we saw that night in Atlanta. And I think if you can get some turnovers here, that's the great equalizer always. I mean, that's, you know, I'm not breaking any new ground here, but I think that's what it's going to take. I think if this game gets played out, pretty much, you know, both sides do what they want to do, I think the Rams, you know, probably are in better shape to win. I think defensively, they're top five in both against the run and pass. I think it's going to be really hard for the Patriots to sustain a lot of drives in this game. They're going to need some help, and they could get it again in special teams. The Rams have really struggled on special teams, not to the point of the Chargers last week, but they've gone through 3 kickers. They've given up some long punt return earlier in the year for a touchdown. So if they can make a play or two, you know, on special teams again to help them out, they got a shot. But if this game is played sort of evenly and, you know, the Rams play relatively mistake-free, I think the Rams will win it. But I don't think it'll be an easy game, maybe like a 23-17 type game.
Well, I was going to say to you, all things being equal, right, roster to roster, the Pats have no business being in this game.
Correct. Yeah.
I would agree. You know, if the Patriots didn't get the opportunity to stay out there, you know, and they lost a day of preparation, I'd feel even worse about it. But I do think the ability to be out there in LA as you know, a minor little factor, I think helps them a little bit. You're right, Mike. If all things are equal, there's no turnovers or one turnover aside or something like that, I like the Rams' chances. But the way the Patriots are going, it's hard to ignore the way they played Sunday and just say, well, it was just one game against a bad team. No, I've seen that before. When they start getting it rolling like that and they get some momentum, sometimes those things continue to carry over. And I think special teams might be one of those areas where they're feeling it right now and they're going to keep making plays in special teams.
I don't know what the over-under is in this game, but I'm with Paul. Under. This game screams like 20-17, 23-13, something like that. Yep. I think that, you know, and the other thing is, you know, when you talk, Mike, when you talk about Evan, you know, believing in the Rams, a lot of the teams that lose to the Patriots implode. They fall apart. Okay, they do. It happens all the time. These guys went 9-7 last year. Now they've bounced back and their identity is different. It's a totally different identity. And, you know, I still don't think much of Jared Goff. He's okay, though. And, you know, over the last 4 years since McVay became the coach, I think they have the fifth best record in the league. Like, it's been a good operation there since he got there.
Yeah. I think that's a great point, Maz. The way I put it today earlier on our show, with a lot of guys have gotten pantsed by Bill Belichick the way Sean McVay did in that Super Bowl, and we never hear from them again. And I think 9-7 last year wasn't a terrible year. They had a lot of things go wrong, and they still found a way to go 9-7. And now they've bounced back. They've put themselves in a position where they could win that division. That's a pretty difficult division, the NFC West. There's no bad team in it. There might not be a great team in it, but all four teams are pretty good. And they've given themselves a chance to win that division. So I agree with you. I think they've established something out there. I think they're a pretty good team. And I think McVay will learn from his mistakes that last game. And another guy, you know, Cooper Kupp did not play that night in the Super Bowl. And I do think that this is one of those teams that has varied weapons, no real star, no guy to focus on, but Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Josh Reynolds, a couple of good tight ends in Higbee and Everett, decent running game with a couple of different guys. You know, Mike, you mentioned that, you know, like that Stephon Diggs, who's the one guy you want to take away? The Rams don't have that one guy you want to take away. So those are the kinds of teams that worry me.
Yeah, that's right. They make them more dangerous. The Patriots typically struggle with these kinds of teams. But, you know, I don't believe in the quarterback, and I think Bill will confuse Goff. I think the Patriots aren't going to give up a ton of points in this game, but I don't know if they're going to be able to score much.
The difference is going to be that Rams defensive front against Cam Newton. Goff sucks, and I think he's going to look like a fool like he did in the Super Bowl. And when he goes up even this year against good pass defenses, he hasn't played well. The two games against the Niners and Miami were his three worst games of the year. So he's going to look like the suck bag Goff that I think he is in this game Thursday night. But the difference is going to be the pressure that Cam Newton faces, and that's why I think the Rams ultimately win.
Okay, boys. Paul, most specifically, thanks for joining us again. We'll catch you next Wednesday.
All right, guys.
Take it easy. Paul Perl, read him on Patriots.com. I see you all lined up with your football calls. I promise we'll get right to you after Murray's 90-second update. There are no commercials.
This is Bob Soucy. The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon. As a runner myself representing the Flutie Foundation at the 2022 Boston Marathon, I'm proud to have been a teammate to many amazing Adaptive Program runners, achieving their dreams at the greatest race in the world. The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at BostonScores.org/Noah.
Hey, the 82 preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. So don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, every opening tip to all those buzzer beaters, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and much more. And if you're new to sports betting, it's super easy to get started. Try betting on something simple like a team to win. Go to the app, select your team, and place your first bet. That's simple. And here's something to sweeten the deal. For new customers, bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Again, use the code SPORTSHUB. And if you're a new customer, you'll get $200 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. That's only on DraftKings.
Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or gamblinghelplinema.org. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com. Physically present in Massachusetts. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.draftkings.com/basketball terms.